Hello, Dr. Lynn, and welcome to COAST.
It is a joy to be with you, Cheryl, and your audience, and tell the rest of the Phoenix Light story, the inside story.
Dr. Lynn, tell us what's happening with the 25th year anniversary of the Phoenix Lights mass sighting coming up soon, how the Phoenix Lights event unfolded in March of 1997, and how you got involved.
Amazingly, I've become one of the key witnesses with the only 35 millimeter photographs of these UAP, unexplained aerial phenomena. And when I finally came forward after 7 years of anonymity, after thousands of people saw what I had been not only witnessing, but documenting on film for 2 years prior, starting in 1995 with a very close sighting that I always go back to, because my husband, who's also a physician, healthy skeptic like myself, actually had a very close sighting of these orbs in pyramid formation, and they cloaked right in front of us. It seemed mechanical, as if there was an intelligence behind them, which, again, I always go back to, because 2 years later, these huge balls of amber light showed up at a distance, and it was unnerving because it was such a massive span. 2 months before the mass sighting, I caught a series of lights head-on, turning into a V-shape. Was so unnerving that I found air traffic controllers the next morning at Sky Harbor International Airport, where it seemed near to, and that were very forthcoming initially, that said that it appeared over Class B restricted airspace, about 1,000 feet altitude. They ruled out every conventional aircraft, balloons, blimps, Chinese lanterns, even flares and skydivers with lights. They had no idea what these were. And this was really important because there were also pilots that also saw this over Class B restricted airspace. And one of them was a meteorologist. And he described them as 6 points of light, totally equidistant from each other, massive span, over a mile wide, that seemed to be attached to something, but they couldn't quite see what these lights were attached to or had a force field holding them in rock solid formation. And he said that actually one of these, the entire thing turned as a unit against the wind. That is another very important data, because it elevated in synchrony, as he put it, and then moved behind South Mountain. And again, this is 2 months before the mass sighting. It's exactly what thousands of people would describe 2 months later during the mass sighting as five lights in a V formation with two trailing. At any rate, I continued photographing these lights. They were so intriguing. As a scientist, I wanted to gather the most important data that I could. On March 13th, unbeknownst to me, while thousands of people were looking up at the sky purposely for a glimpse of the Hale-Bopp comet, they also caught a glimpse of mile and larger. And actually, Peter Davenport, the director of the National UFO Reporting Center in Seattle, Washington, a couple of years ago, from all the data that he had accumulated from all these years, said that one of these objects, whether it was these orbs that seemed to be attached to something or actual craft, was over 8 miles wide, which is mind-boggling. But in reality, the mass sighting on March 13th, besides the fact that they were being seen and documented on film by other people, as well as myself, for weeks before, started at 3 p.m. on March 13th. There were actually sightings by Native Americans in New Mexico. In California, two commercial airline pilots reported that one of these massive over mile wide craft, actual craft, was covering Las Vegas. And the sightings continued until the next morning, when a Boeing crewman described coming into work that morning at Sky Harbor International Airport, and his whole crew saw one of these massive craft right over their tarmac.
What did the media and government military do after the mass sighting was over?
The military knew what was going on, because that night, an alleged crewman at 3 a.m. called the National UFO Reporting Center, Peter Davenport, very detailed, stating that Luke Air Force Base sent out aircraft to intercept and get gun camera film of one of these massive over mile wide craft that was hovering right over Central Phoenix. And as far as the technology goes, these mile and larger objects were rooftop level, totally silent. And here we're talking about incredible technology, not only the massiveness and how the propulsion even happened. People don't know to this day how it even just glided right over people's heads about 30 miles an hour, totally silent. Some took off at blink speed without even dispersing the air. Just incredible technology, to be sure. One of the craft actually split in two and then shot straight up. So, I mean, we're talking about technology that we have not seen in 25 years. And yet, after the mass sighting, there was no investigation, no explanation, until months later in May, the former Councilwoman Vice Mayor of Phoenix, Frances Barwood, asked innocently, because she had so many constituents getting in touch saying, why isn't there an investigation? She asked for one and was just plastered to the wall. I have to tell you, Cheryl, there was so much snickering and laughing and ridicule and discrediting of some of the experts that were trying to figure this out.
Most media just picked up on a couple of hours when people were outside looking up at the sky for a glimpse of the comet. But you were a key witness. You had the only 35 millimeter photographs of these mysterious aerial phenomena before and after. Plus, you studied this data meticulously for over 25 years. And now you say at this point, there is so much more to the story.
As the story unfolded, it's very interesting because, again, there was no investigation that we knew of, no explanation. And then suddenly, on June 18th, front page USA Today article opened our sighting for the first time up to international scrutiny. Before then, it was just a conversation and a buzz in Arizona. Now, and it was amazing because we didn't have social media in 97. It went viral overnight. And reporters from all over the world were speaking with the witnesses, and their descriptions were so detailed and so heartfelt. But they would be asking, why isn't there an investigation? Why isn't there an explanation? But as far as the mass sighting, the big over every newspaper, Phoenix lights were flares. And by the way, that's the only explanation they ever came up with. They never, ever addressed the craft that thousands of people saw right over their heads, rooftop level. To this day, the Phoenix lights have never been recreated or explained. And yet they're appearing worldwide. But it's interesting how the story unfolded itself, because right after the 10th anniversary, we find out that, and bravely so, our former governor, who had mocked the sighting in 97, came forward and disclosed that he actually witnessed one of these craft. And as an awarded military pilot, not only did he debunk the whole flare theory, but also he said that what he saw was otherworldly. And then Nimitz pilots also coming forward around that time. The private pilot that had been mentioned to me by the air traffic controllers the morning after the mass sighting also came forward. And that pilot was actor Kurt Russell, which blew me away. He was actually reporting the sighting that I was filming at the same time on March 13th, 1997, during the mass sighting.
Dr. Lynn, how would you compare the way the media handled it then in 1997 and how you think it would likely be handled today by the media if a similar event should occur, given that the government now admits to and it releases Navy videos of unexplained craft and more?
I mean, the media at the time, for the most part, except for a couple of people that actually saw one of the craft and want to get to the bottom of it as well, were very cruel. Anybody that came forward really did not have an open media forum to share. And that has only transformed recently, actually, to the last few years, that the military and government have finally come forward to say that they are studying them, that some things in our airspace that we cannot explain, not only in our airspace, but also diving into our oceans. I always say, we don't know what these are, but we know that they are. And it's time we get this topic out in the open and address it, accept it, and study it so we can find out not only who's driving these things, but also move forward in our own evolution.
There were a whole lot of various theories that floated around, including holograms, mass psychosis, and so on. How did you respond to all of that? You were right in the middle of it. And as you said, you stayed silent for 7 years, but you had a lot to handle.
It was very frustrating, actually, especially when they came out with the flare theory, because the military, as I mentioned earlier, knew what was going on. They even sent out jets to intercept the thing, and it disappeared right in front of them. As far as the different other things, holograms, I mean, we're talking multiple things happening at the same time. These orb arrays in rock-solid equidistant formations, a mile to 8 miles wide, as well as actual craft and multiple craft and in different multiple location. So somebody had to be very talented to be able to do holograms, I have to tell you. Anything that has come up has actually been debunked.
You told me you felt there was an interactive intelligence involved with the lights. And UFO photo analyst was quoted in your book saying, they know you're taking photos of them. It sure got the attention of the late, great Apollo 14 astronaut Edgar Mitchell. He took a great interest in this mass sighting event, and he speaks strongly throughout your documentary, saying he followed the sightings all the way through and had no doubts that we were visited. Did he ever share with you what he felt was the strongest evidence out of this, that we had been visited by extraterrestrials?
I had no idea until we sat down to do the interview that he was actually following the Phoenix Light story closely. And then when he learned of all the other incidences that I had photographed and witnessed, it definitely was not of this world. He really felt that we were definitely being visited. And I have to tune back to the native cultures here as well, because 6 months before the mass sighting, I was invited to the Gila Bend Indian Reservation, which is in between South Mountain, which is just south of the airport, and a few miles back is the Estrella Mountain Range, and they're in the basin in between. These anomalous aerial phenomena keep popping up in that area. They were looking up at them on March 13th during the mass sighting. They call them sky people, light beings. It's part of their culture. They invite them in. The Hopi right here in Arizona have protocols to invite these phenomena in. They believe that there are other intelligences out there, as did Dr. Edgar Mitchell, that are with us in other dimensions and so forth. And they even said that that's how the Estrella Mountains got its name. It means star in Spanish, gateway to the stars. And they also believe that there is a gateway or portal in that area. And again, science, we look for repeatability, and these phenomena keep popping up, and consistently they pop up in that area, very sacred ground, and they do believe in other intelligences and welcome them.